back here on a Sunday. A little torrential downpouring outside, kind of put the rain on the parade there, all pun intended. Welcome to Steel and Maz, Maz Music Radio's Pioneer Podcast. Again, we're in Quincy Point here, the Maz Music Radio headquarters. Tonight we'll give you everything you need to know about the Bruins and Celtics, you know, advancing to the next round. You know, the Red Sox are in a complete reform. I think Askins here wants to get it going of how you reshape that type of team with Magic, Steel, Askins. And, you know, we got a very special guest tonight. Slippery Pete Barrick joins the show. What's going on, man? How are you
doing? What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yep. So,
absolutely, brother.
Thank you.
So it's raining outside. It's also raining when I'm stepping on the basketball court, and it's raining whenever I'm picking picks and gambling. So it's been a great weekend, and I'm blessed to see and be here right now. Happy to let it rip.
Sounds like a kid who's not back to neutral, but we got Pete Barrett here. Just made his UFC debut fight 2 weeks ago. I know you were in the Contender Series, but just kind of give me a rundown there. How was that whole, I mean, you're going to Vegas, the no fans. We talked a little bit before the show, just the comparison. I know that in the Contender Series, there isn't anyone there really, like in fans. So, like, how did it really relate there, and what was your plan of action going in the fight?
Yeah, I mean, so when we flew out there, our plane was, like, completely empty. We were able to, like, each have our own rows. But when we landed in Vegas, like, the airport was pretty busy. We were actually all pretty shocked at how many people were there. But once we got over to the hotel with the USC, like, it was immediately a COVID test, temperature check. And then once we got that done, we were quarantined to the hotel pretty much until the morning when the results were back, which is kind of cool. Not cool, but, like, they did a pretty good job. So, like, if we wanted to order food or groceries or anything like that, they had a staff that would take the food from wherever it was coming from, like DoorDash and whatnot, and bring it right up to our rooms for us. So, like, they were doing their best to take care of us.
So you guys had more of, like, a mini bubble type of sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So they have, like, this – they rented out this one hotel complex for, like, 10 weeks. So they just have the fighters coming in and out and staying in there. One corner's on, you know, one side of the campus. Another corner's on the other side of the campus. So they do a pretty good job taking care of us, you know. They know that, like, they're under the microscope right now because they're one of the only sport leagues competing. So they're going above and beyond to make sure that, like, nobody can give them any shit. Like, what was it, the first weekend? They heard about, you know, they didn't want Joe Rogan in the cage, talking to the fighters, touching the fighters, shaking their hands, touching this guy's hand, then touching that guy's hand. So now they have everything where you're doing everything. All the interviews are remote. So it was pretty cool in that respect to see them, like, go so far above and beyond what was required to make sure that, like, we were able to compete in a safe space, I guess would be the best way to say it. Like, granted, I think there's a lot of bullshit going on with this whole pandemic, but they're doing everything that they need to do to make sure everybody's happy with what's going on.
Yeah, everyone's good. Yeah,
you know what I mean. So they're not giving anybody a chance to, like, give them shit for what they're doing. And Dana's doing everything above and beyond. Yeah,
yeah.
He's the perfect guy to, like, for this sport and for them to be the ones that took over during the pandemic. And,
yeah,
like,
definitely.
Do it the way they've done. Like, anyone could talk shit to him, and I love how he's just like, they're dorks.
Yeah,
puts,
like,
them in a body bag. Anyone who says anything, it's like, good luck.
What was it? Scott Coker was trying to say that he's got the best light heavyweight division, and Dana White was like, yeah, but I released all those guys within the last 2 or 3 years, so fuck you. Like, it's bullshit. Like, there's no one in your talent pool that I haven't already seen that hasn't already been released for my organization. So, like, pound sand.
Brought in the show,
Like, that was the same card. The balls is hot guy had to take a shit, right? That was
Derek Lewis.
Yeah, Derek Lewis. Yeah,
stud. That guy's an absolute beast.
He's a monster, dude. He was the main event the night that I fought. Yeah. And he's just a big dude. A
dude,
real big
dude.
I
can only imagine looking at that guy like, fuck.
Like, have you gotten a chance to, like, hang out with these guys at all? Or train with them at all? Meet them?
I mean, you see everybody in passing, but it's like, I'm not fanboying anybody when I'm there. You know what I mean? Like, he's got his own shit to do. I've got my own shit to do. Like, we're all there to do our job. So, like, short answer, no. You know what I mean? Everybody's on their own schedule doing their own thing. So, like, when we got over to the PI, because it's COVID, the UFC PI, the Performance Institute, like you had to schedule your time there. So like if I wanted to be there from 4 to 5, Yusuf Zalal could not be there, and no one from his team was supposed to be there from 4 to 5.
Oh, wow.
Or not even, maybe let's say they shouldn't be there from 3 to 4, so we're not crossing 4 to 5 or 5 to 6, you know what I mean? So they're trying to do their best to keep the people who are fighting each other separated from each other, also because of, you know, cross-contamination and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like the Nevada State Athletic Commission is very strict on what they're allowing them to do and not to do. So like they're just trying to minimize the amount of people that could cross paths, and like potentially, you know, someone in my camp got sick, then I have it, and I get someone else's camp sick who might see someone
on
else,
the
and
next
then
one,
like
yeah.
before that's you know it, bad. They're scrapping 3 or 4 fights that night because the last COVID test you have a couple guys positive. So they're just, you know, they just keep everybody separate on their own and try not to let anybody cross paths.
So it's you and your team basically the whole time till the fight.
Yeah, so it was pretty sweet. So we were at, like, I think it was like a courtyard or whatnot, Marriott courtyard or something. But they put each team in their own suite. So me and one of my coaches were in one suite, and two of my other coaches were in another suite, full kitchen, living room and whatnot. And then we had another training room that had mats on the floor where I cut my weight, did all my pads and all that shit. So we didn't even need to go to the PI if we didn't want to, but they have, you know, like physical therapists that can do, you know, all sorts of great things for your body when it's fight week and you're all beat up and tore up. So we did get over there, but we didn't necessarily need to if we didn't want to.
What did you learn? What were your takeaways from the Yusuf Zalal fight?
I was a little gun-shy during that fight, but what I did do was a lot of really good things throughout the fight. Like, one, you know, I took that kick right to the face and got back up.
I was going to say, that was a lot of resilience.
I got kicked right in the fucking mouth, you know, opening 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. But, like, he's 10-2. I want to say, like, 7 or 8 of his finishes or his fights are first-round submissions, and I shut down a submission game.
You're a really dynamic fighter, though, you know. I mean, obviously the 15-second kick came in right away, and I think the last – I mean, I watched the full fight. Last 2 rounds, you really held your own. I thought you were right there.
The second and third round, I think, were fairly even. And, like, when they – not to get off topic, but when they read the scores at the end of the fight, like, I knew I lost that fight. Yeah. But when I heard, like, 30-26, I was like, give me a fucking break. Like, that first round wasn't that bad.
Come on, man.
Dude, someone gave him a 10-A round. I was like, that hurt my heart. But –
I'll give a shout out to the UFC officials. Figure it the fuck out.
Grow up.
They gotta find out that judge is from New York. Yeah. I think that's what I do love seeing
like all the commenters on the internet like saying like this is how that ten fight. Eight, yeah, everyone's eight, like, their whatever, own official.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But, like it does suck. Like obviously for you when you're in there and like you might not have won the round. But
to see a 10-8 round,
yeah, it's like come on.
I did not fight that bad in that round. That's bullshit.
Yeah. But like I shut down his defensive game. I did really well with my footwork cutting him off. I was doing a good job keeping him here, but I wasn't like getting off strikes when I got him to cut directions back, to turn back. So, excuse me, I was doing a really good job cutting him off, taking good angles and not chasing him, but I wasn't getting off at those opportunities. Yeah. So they were like missed opportunities to score or to strike. I mean, I'm super critical of myself when I watch my performances, so like I know I did it was a really good debut, but there's like a lot of things that I see that I could do better and improve on, my last local fight at Cage Titans, like that's how I should have fought this fight. Instead I hung back where I should have put pressure and clinched into the cage, you know, and really utilized my wrestling a little bit more. But we were really focused on his submission game because it was really strong. He's really good, you know, front chokes. So I was more defensive-minded than offensive-minded going into that fight. So
that makes sense.
Sometimes that's the, like, best route to go because you give yourself the best opportunity to, when you find that moment, you really kind of grasp it. I mean, obviously it kept going back and forth and it went to decision, but you think that's, like, more of your game where you're defensive-minded, but you kind of approach it as, when I get this shot, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, I mean, like, my biggest takeaway is to never game plan defensively again. Like, acknowledge what I need to be aware of and then game plan, like, the offense that will negate his offense. So, like, instead of focusing on, you know, just cutting him off, like, let's take away the whole opportunity to cut off and let's pressure him to the cage, pummel to a takedown, and put him on his back. Yeah. So there's just two different routes to the same destination. You can either program defensively or you can program offensively. And it was like, that was one of the things that Conor said when he fought Khabib, was like, you know, the whole camp, we were worried about him taking me down, not about being an offensive wrestler myself. And I wish I focused on being the offensive wrestler, not a defensive wrestler, because my whole game plan was defensively based and I'm an offensive fighter. And I much feel like that sentiment like resonates with me in this last camp. Like, I should have just went in there and bullied the fuck out of him and beat him up. And I think like I respected his offense way too much.
Yeah, let's talk about the camp a little bit. So like, how long, like, when you got the fight, how much was in advance? I know it was very, like, short notice, right?
Yeah.
So, like, how much do you have time to prepare, and where do you prepare? Like, who are your guys?
So, I had signed to fight Steve Garcia originally, and he fell out, like, 2 weeks before the fight. And it wasn't like, hey, he's out, what do you think about this guy? It was, hey, Yusuf Salal's in, are you guys going to take this fight? So, I didn't really feel like I had an... I wouldn't have said no anyways, but I didn't really have, like, an option between anything else.
Oh, yeah,
else.
It's a hell of
like,
an opportunity.
It was like, you know, here's your replacement. This guy's out. He's out with an injury. Here you go. So, like, we went from preparing for a southpaw striker back to an orthodox striker, more of an aggressive fighter to more of a counter striker. So,
it's huge. Like, that's... like,
you know what I mean? It was just two different styles that we were getting ready for, and, like... you know, in my head, I feel like I've been fighting long enough where it shouldn't matter. But definitely, like, the last-minute changes impact what you've got going and, like, the momentum that you have going for the camp, because you totally got to shut it down and change gears.
Was there any difference in, like, your camp because of, like, COVID and stuff? Like, how, like, much did that impact? Like, was it a totally different, like, thing?
Yeah, so normally, like, pre-COVID... you know, I would go, I always train at Lozon's in Sitiatong. But previous to this, like, I would go to, let's say, like, the two kickboxing classes before sparring or team training at Sit. And then, you know, I'd go to Lozon's and I'd do the 10 a.m. classes, and then I'd hang around from 11 to 12 and work in the side room. So it was classes and then the one-on-one time, or classes, team training, and then one-on-one time if I was able to get it in. With this, we had to organize like small groups from each gym that would consist that could consistently train with, and so like it was just all me with the guys that I was training with. Like, they knew that they were going to get some work in, but they were there to get me ready to get my hand raised when I fought. So it was just like, this is what we need to cover, this is what we need to go over. He's getting all the work. You guys can work in and hang out after. But it was like the first time I had a really selfish camp, which was not a negative thing, but it was a good thing, because it was all about me, not how am I going to fit my stuff in around everybody else and working with like the general pop of people that come in.
Let me spin it back here. So, I mean, getting into mixed martial arts in general, in my opinion, is like psychotic. Like, I just think it's like a hell
wild. Yes. It's
so how did you get into the whole thing? Like, did you start with boxing or anything, or was it just like when, like, at a young age, you were like, let's do this?
No, I actually got into mixed martial arts really, really late in the game.
But oh, really?
I wrestled all through high school, and then I went to college and played rugby, and then I got back into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai as I was finishing college in Denver. And when I moved home after graduating, my cousin was training and fighting at the time, so I was just like, fuck it, like, let's go do this for a little bit, and I just fell in love with it, and I haven't stopped.
So, like, getting into the octagon or whatever the ring was the first time, like, getting hit for that first time, getting that first, whether knockout, submission, like, how does that feel? Like, did you, like, oh, I want a lot more of this?
So, my amateur debut, I lost, like, a barn burner 3-round, like, hockey fight.
Wow.
And it was like, we just sat there and beat the shit out of each other for like 10 minutes. Blows. Yeah, dude, like, like rocking sock and robots. But we just like sat there and banged it out. And I lost. And it was just like, dude, I want to fight again tonight. Like, how do I do this? Like, I need to do this again. Like, I'm not happy with that shit. Like, I was used to wrestling in high school where you get to compete like 4 times on a Saturday. You'd get 4 matches, you know what I mean? And that was like, that competitiveness was like reawoken, or like came back to life that night when I fought. And then it was just something I knew I could put my heart into. And, you know, it's been a fucking hell of a trip since.
Speaking of barn burning fights, in preparation for this interview, I was very excited to do.
I popped in UFC 2009 Undisputed for Xbox 360 last night, and I was knocking back Forrest Griffin, beating up Rashad Evans, and making Rampage Jackson tap out. You know, we're not fanboying here, but any like dream fight you could, opponent you would love, even if it's like, you know, not your weight, like even Kimbo Slice, for instance, I think a fight with any RIP, anyone.
I mean,
yeah, RIP,
RIP, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've never really thought of it that way, but I mean, I would love to fight like Tyler Durden from the book. Ooh. Fight Club.
Ooh. Ooh. Yes! Yes!
You know what
an
mean?
Answer! Yeah.
You didn't see what
maybe, an maybe answer. Not the narrator, Tyler Durden, like, oh, the crazy yeah. psychopath.
God. Fucking Brad Pitt. Bastard.
Right. But you don't want to read the book too. Like in the book, it's a lot more twisted.
I do want to read that book.
But it,
great
yeah,
movie.
Definitely yeah. Tyler Durden.
I love that.
Going back to like, so if you were a wrestler, but were you like a fighter kind of kid, or you know?
No, I just wrestled through high school, and it was like right around I graduated 2005, so that was right when like the Ultimate Fighter was getting big, and like the UFC was starting to gain like a little bit of momentum, and. It was just like, I was like, dude, this would be really cool, but like, fuck getting punched in the face. That's going to suck. Like, I was kind of like too afraid to really get into it. And it just so happened that like I went to college in Denver, and like Denver's a huge hotspot for MMA. Like Denver's a hotspot for like all the weird fucking
weed,
niche sports.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, weed's not a sport, but it could be. I'd be a professional there too. But like rugby's got a huge like hotbed of talent out in Colorado. MMA, like. Judo's down there. There's a couple of Olympic training facilities out in Colorado. Back to the point, I was out in Colorado and I'm like, there's a lot of local talent. There's a lot of good places where I could really give this a shot. And me and my buddy one day just decided to go start taking these Muay Thai classes under Brandon Thatch, and like pretty much got invited to go to fight team 1 week, and they were like, your wrestling's pretty good. Like, you should give us some consideration. Like, come train with us, this and that. And then life got in the way, and I ended up moving home after college, and then I picked it back up a few years later.
So how does the opportunity of the Contender Series, like, come arise? Like, how were you able to grasp that? Because that's really tough to do. I mean, a lot of these amateur fighters out here, they're not getting shots like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, like, the sport's so developed, you have, like, the amateur and the pro ranks, so you actually have an opportunity to, like, give it a test run to see if this is something you really want to do. Like, a lot of guys will fight as amateurs and then never make the leap to pro, or if they do, it's like, oh, they don't take it so seriously. They do it here and there every once in a while. But to be a pro and then to be considered for the Contender Series is, like, a huge accolade, because what they're pretty much trying to do is find the best talent that's not signed to the UFC, mm-hmm. match them with someone, and dangle a contract in front of him and be like, come get this motherfucker, who wants it more?
Yeah, come in.
Which is how I got that job, that opportunity to fight Sang-Hoon Yoo from South Korea. Like, nobody wanted to fight him, you know what I mean? And all I knew was that he was a 5-0 kid from South Korea. Come to find out he's got, like, over 300 kickboxing fights. And I didn't hear this until I'm like walking to the cage. I'm like, oh, this is why nobody wanted to fight old boy. This is gonna be awesome, you know. So it's
like three trunks.
You know, so like that, getting that nod to fight on the Contender Series was pretty badass to begin with, and then to get the victory and to get the contract is like even more of an accomplishment.
So I always ask, coming in, we have a kid, Lightso Lang. Frank the Tank. So all these origin of nicknames, I like really want to know. So where does Slippery Peep come from? Obviously, that like we get the pun, we get the UFC reference, but is that what it's from, or is that
no? So Slippery Pete has absolutely nothing to do with fighting, like zero zilch, not a thing.
Not at all.
Just the fact that the name arose while I had already started fighting, and that's how it stuck. So how do I want to start this? So my mom and stepdad were having a dinner party, just having the family over. So my mom has me and my two brothers, three boys, and then my stepdad has five daughters. Yeah. So I have five stepdaughters on that side, all older with kids, whatever, uncle, the whole nine. But we go on vacation every summer, or we did for a while growing up, all the kids, all the girls, we'd all get together with their kids. And it was after dinner, we were having drinks, and one of my sisters was going, you know, I remember this place, this was such a good time, this place was such a good time, this place was such a good time, you know, on and on and on. And she goes, you know, for all the memories I have, like, I don't remember Peter being there. And my stepdad at this point, he was on, like, I don't want to say he was on his way out, but he was, he passed away, and the condition that he had kind of like made him a little loopy, depending on how well like his heart was working that day. So he looked at my stepsister and was like, "Who, Slippery Pete? He was always there, but he was out chasing the ladies. He was out chasing the women." Like, so it was like, "What?" And he's like, "All right, at least you know they picked up on it." But I got back to the gym on Monday and I was telling my buddies that I trained with about it, and they were like, "There it is. That's the birth of the nickname, like Slippery Pete. There we go.
Let's go."
You know, people were like, "Is that from Seinfeld?" I'm like, "No, it's not from Seinfeld, but I understand the reference."
Yeah.
That's incredible, though, because, like, I don't know, me just looking at that nickname, I'm thinking, like, oh, it's from, like, his fighting. It's like, no, it's completely different.
Totally.
It's
no, because I was such a man whore that my everybody recognized it.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, we're all running around.
Nothing against man whores. We got a couple in the room here.
So my next question is, so last, was it October, I went to UFC Boston. I saw all those guys fight. I saw Joe Lozon, like that. If that's his last fight, that's a hell of a way to go out. So, obviously, who knows when the TD Garden's going to have a next, like, everyone fan type of thing there. But if you were ever given that opportunity, how much would that mean to you just, like, for your career?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to get on that Boston card after the contender, and there was just no opportunities that materialized.
Yeah.
You know, Sean Shelby, the matchmaker for those divisions, knew that Dana was like, if you're healthy, you can fight. Like, let's get him a fight. There just wasn't anything that was produced beyond that.
Like, yeah.
Whether nobody was ready, nobody took the offer, I'm not sure. So I just know that nothing came of it. But if I could fight in the Garden, like, that would be pretty badass.
Yeah.
That would be sweet. Cool. Like the whole idea, like, last summer, my whole goal was to fight on the contender, win, and then make my debut in Boston.
Ooh.
So, like, I mean... I got on the contender, I got my contract, and I just didn't get that debut in Boston. But whatever, I mean.
No one saw coronavirus coming.
No shit, right? Yeah, you know, and like,
yeah, the world ended.
Had that not happened, like, it would have happened in April against Danny Henry, which was a whole other awesome fight that never happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now we got spinning back kick to the face highlight reel, not like knockdown for old boy, but like
hey,
it was a hell of a
that's
what I'm saying. Like,
and I want to see you need a gun to stop me.
What's
your,
that?
Your original opponent, Garcia, it was?
Yeah, Steve Garcia.
Yeah, so I would love to see you guys go at it.
No, me too. Yeah, I would definitely like to punch him in the mouth.
Do you have a guy that you're, like, looking for the next fight? Like, who you're trying to get?
Sign the dotted line, no.
Yeah,
like, I just need to get some momentum rolling. Like, what Zalal's got going for him right now is exactly what I wanted to get going for myself. Like, they're letting you fight as much as possible as long as you're ready. So this is like, he fought in January, he fought in April, he fought me. That was his third time, and he's already announced that he's fighting again before the end of the year. So that's four fights.
Oh, wow.
That's his four-fight contract, and he's won three so far, you know what I mean? So, like, if you're willing and able, they'll let you fight. You know what I mean? I think Charles Rose has fought twice, Calvin's fought twice, Zalal's fought three times. The kid that fought right after me, that was his second fight, you know. So as long as you can make weight and you're in shape and you're willing to fight, they'll take you right now. And I think that's why a lot of guys are getting signed to the UFC right now too, because they are ready and they're looking to get guys that are ready and willing to fight, because they have to put these fights on regardless.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
They're not going to do a five night.
You know what I mean? Like a five fight a night type of deal. Like, they like to put on the full card. So as long as you're ready and willing, they're going to let you fight.
Hell yeah.
I got my fan question tonight. Jordan Reynolds, my Plymouth State alum, big guy here. Feel free to answer this any way you want. It's not too tricky. But if CM Punk was ever given the opportunity to you, how do you think that fight would go?
Me against him?
Yes.
Oh, bro, I don't think it would be a fair fight. You know? I don't.
Damn massacre.
It would. It would be a bloodbath, hopefully. Or it'd be quick, but I mean,
He's a punk bitch. He blocked me on Twitter.
He did. Harassing him?
Are you being
a bully?
He's all
about that positive message, dude. You can't be raining negativity on his parade. He just hits the block button and doesn't have to deal with you.
Yeah, come on, man.
He's like, dude, I'm just trying to have a good time and motivate kids, and he's over here being a dick.
Block.
All I did was, I posted a picture. I think it was an old picture. He was throwing a first pitch out at a game, and it was a Cardinals jersey. And he's CM Punk, Chicago made. He's a Cubs, big Chicago fan. I kept tweeting that picture out whenever he blocked me. like a fucking coward, and I hope you do kick his ass one day.
But I mean, in the same method there, he was like, what, scheduled to fight at 205 or like 185? Like he's a big dude.
Yeah.
Not a big dude. Like, he's, I mean, I don't think he really ever looked like he was in shape, but he's like a bigger guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, maybe I could, maybe we could meet at like 170. I'd still smash him.
Yeah.
Start bulking.
Start tweeting at him. Even in the parking lot, I'd like to see that, you know?
He, what was it like? Somebody just started posting about USADA and how, like, they're not, like, the guys that they do test, they're really good about it, but they're not really good about testing everybody. Yeah. And I think he's had, like, some of the most negative tests in X amount of time amongst the whole UFC roster. So, like, out of everybody that competes in the UFC, he's been tested the most.
So, but he's only
fought one. No, like for USADA, for PEDs.
Oh, yeah, that's what I yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, every once in a while, USADA will show up and be like, Peter, I need to watch you pee in this cup.
Yeah, yeah.
Here you go, buddy. Have fun. And he's like, and legit, like, he's like this. No, it's not that bad, but he's got to watch. He's got to make sure, you know, it's you.
Yeah, yeah.
Brock,
you know what
was
I mean?
Bad with that.
Oh, he got, so that's why, like, he would get announced that he was getting back into the testing pool and then would need, like, 9 months before he fought to get everything out of the system.
That's pathetic. Why even, you know, why even fool yourself like that?
Well,
it's, no, like, Brock Lesnar was, like, you had to be, like, 265 or whatever, like, heavyweight, like, that guy was clearly, like, 3'10".
Like, at all times.
Quite happy. Yeah, like, clearly.
Each time I was still absolutely excited to see him, you know, back in the octagon and stuff, but it's just, you know, that's just so cheap and putting people at risk.
He beat Frank Mir, and his post-game speech was like, he was like, I'm going to drink a Coors Light.
He was like, fuck Budweiser, I'm going to drink a Coors Light because they pay me.
And Dana was like, I'm going to top my wife tonight. He was flipping the crowd off.
Dana White's like, buddy, this isn't the WWF. That'll never happen
like,
again. Shut the fuck up.
I'm not Vince McMahon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, stop
He's
it.
Like, those are not the type of antics we want here.
You say fuck WWE, I mean, post-fight ventures, maybe we can get you in professional wrestling. That could be like your
that,
hype man.
I mean, yeah, that wouldn't. I wouldn't mind that.
Vince McMahon cuts the check.
I'm pretty sure
Chuck O'Neill did
there.
That, right? He still competes in the lower scene.
James is an ultimate hype man. He hyped up Mike in
the
video.
I was a manager for Rough and Rowdy, and we have the good video going. And I see you. You're a good-looking guy. That's what Vince McMahon looks, and you have the fighting background. Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler, and Matt Riddle currently. Matt Riddle.
Rings
former UFC fighter, yeah, he's currently thriving in WWE. He has a very good personality, and if you're interested, I mean, we can maybe get something going.
Twitter hard, right?
I mean, it's really
we'll
Twitter
go.
And YouTube. Let's blow this shit up.
Let's do it. Let's
do
it.
Do you have any other entrepreneur endeavors other than UFC type stuff?
I got a couple college degrees that I could always use, but
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I gotta.
Well, yeah, I mean, your career is.
I'd rather stay on the athletic side.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, if I get older and I go to the WWE, they're not against any of that, the TRT, so I could just get all jacked up on that like an 18-year-old and live my dream until I'm like 60, right, dude? Like, you'd never know that I'm 34, but I mean, I am. So let's continue that shit going. Let's jump leagues and juice up.
Yeah.
I can't wait to
only after I'm done fighting, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You have a bunch of, you know, pro wrestlers now that try to do, you know, try their hand in MMA and, you know,
they get fucked up.
Yeah, CM Punk's example. He just got his ass kicked. And Brock worked, but, you know.
Yeah, well, Brock was like a freak athlete, though. Like, he was a standout college
wrestler.
John Cena's
a big one for, like, shit. Like, dude, John Cena was clearly on
Cena, he was a Central Catholic kid or a Central Cathedral kid.
Oh, yeah, West Newbury, baby.
Yeah.
What was it? The Rock just came out with his own, like, tequila brand. I was drinking that shit today. It was amazing.
The Rock owns the XFL now, which is, like, my favorite fucking
Oh, does he really?
Yeah. Like, he bought it from Vince McMahon. That's
recently
amazing.
Recently or before the season
like
relaunch?
Week, like, past week, he just got
no
deals
shit.
Done.
Dude, that video with him working out with PK Subban is, like, unbearable. Like,
PK Subban's a midget.
He looks like skin and bones compared to that guy.
And that is a
dude,
professional athlete.
The Rock is
athlete.
Just a monster, though.
He's got some
and you
cooking.
Know, like, I would love to see, like, a panel of what's in his system. You know what I mean? Like, let's see what kind of shit he's doing. Like, what kind of gear he's on. I would love to see that.
But I think
I played for the 90s U. Like, he's not fucking around.
Slippery Pete could be the next big pro wrestling star, though. Slippery Pete's a great marketing.
we gotta focus on his UFC career.
Of course, I know. I'm already writing checks.
We're talking.
Start writing his business plan.
I asked you your dream fight earlier, and I had another kind of funky question like that, and maybe it could be the same answer. So you're in a barroom fight.
Yeah.
You can have two guys, fictional or non-fictional, to back you up in this barroom fight, who you rolling with? My personally, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Chuck Norris.
Oh, Chuck Norris.
Take who are we fighting? Who's in this barroom?
It's a bunch of goons, a bunch of assholes. that don't like studs.
Tyler Durden, you're fighting Brad Pitt. This is the moment.
He wouldn't stand a chance either, dude. We're talking Brad Pitt, like he's toast.
But we got two guys backing you up.
If I could have two people, fictional, non-fictional, doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. I would have to say something along the lines of like Deadpool and Wolverine.
Oh, fuck yeah.
You clear out that room. Like
that room ain't standing a chance. They're all dead.
And he won.
That's a great one.
He won
that's
the fight. Good God.
Yeah, you don't even got to do anything.
Oh, I wanted to know who was in that room. I mean, if we're just talking,
someone who's dead.
Yeah.
if it's the Incredible Hulk, then that's a whole
that's what you got to have Wolverine for. Yeah, he's the only one that got him.
Even that's like the equivalency of the mixture of Fergie and Jesus. It's good. So my last question of the night. So obviously you've had this kind of long MMA career. What do you want to get out of this sport by the time you finish? I mean, you've already accomplished a lot. What do you want to keep, what do you keep fighting for? That's my point.
Oh, because I'm not about to make someone else a bunch of fucking money, ever. You know, I did that for like 3 or 4 years. I was crushing it in the information marketing industry, and I quit that in 2017 to focus on fighting. So, like, I know what that 9-to-5 career shit is like, and I'll mark my words, I'll never do that again. So hopefully with fighting I can stay in long enough where I have built a brand, have products to offer, and you know, have like a good network of a sustainable income, whether that be through personal training, coaching, having my own team underneath me, possibly a facility, maybe my own fight promotion, who knows. Like Donnie Cerrone's killing it, not only in the UFC and in other things, but he's got Donald Cout, like Cowboy Presents, or Donald Cerrone Presents, and he runs it out in Arizona, New Mexico, wherever the hell he's at, out by his ranch. He has his own promotion where like it is a lot of Jackson guys, it is a lot of guys from like those super schools out there, but he puts on shows, they sell tickets, he makes some money. You know, there's not a ton of money in it, but there's not a ton of people that are really, really good at doing it. You know, that's like why I always stayed with Mike Pulvera, the owner of Cage Titans. Yep. Like, he fought when he was younger, he fought and saw how terrible of a job all these promoters were doing. It was like, I can do this better. I'm gonna do this better. Cage Titans was born, and that's why I only fought for him. Like, I did have that one fight with CES, but what happened there was, CES has a contract where they were doing Access TV fights, so they had to put on an event on this Friday night no matter what. And what had happened was Bellator showed up that same weekend and took all the top fighters and said, you know, because
there it is. What are you going to do?
So, yeah, and I mean, that just kind of speaks volumes about the type of people that fight for CES. Like, there's no loyalty there. Like, they're going to go fight for whoever pays them the most amount of money. So CES hit up Cage Titan and said, hey, we need to put on this show, like, why don't we feature all of your guys, and kind of like spun it that way. So it was really like a Cage Titans event that CES put their banner on to make sure that they fulfilled their TV contract with Access TV. So that was the one time I fought for them outside of there. But like, back to my original point, there's not a ton of people doing it like a really good job at it. There's Mike Pulvera. Mm-hmm. Like, CES is like, they do a good job, but like, I have my own personal issues that I don't need to air out here. But like, I've had issues, like, I fought for them and I had issues that like resonate with a lot of other people that have fought with them.
Yeah.
They've had a lot of the same issues.
If you ever do eventually want to spill the tea, I think that'd be great.
I mean, it's no secret. Like, they said, we'll honor your contract with Cage Titans. My Cage Titans cut of my tickets with 20%. And they tried to get away with only paying me 10%. I had to get on the phone with Pulvera. Pulvera got on the phone with those guys, give him his extra 10%, this and that. So, like, at the end of the day, I got paid what I was owed, but it was still, like,
nonsense.
Process to get
like
the fucking money. Like,
being a fucking asshole.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
They're like, oh, well, that's our contract. Well, yeah, you told him that you'd honor all of his contracts, and we do our stuff on a handshake. So if you're honoring his contract, you're honoring my fucking agreement. Like, me and my younger brother fought together, so we sold a fuck ton of tickets. We had
work.
A big draw.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We hustled our tickets because that was another way for us to make an income. You know what I mean? Like, we did it right. Like, from the rip, we always had fight shirts. We always had like organized camps. We always had like an entourage. But
so you're helping
a team.
We had a team. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when me and my brother Max fought, like, the events which would sell out regardless because people would want to see the two brothers fight on the same night and like blow the fucking roof off the place. You know what I mean?
That's, so nothing like Rough and Rowdy.
Yeah. So like when you were talking about fighting your brother, me and my brother, like we used to like. We beat the fucking piss out of each other. You know what I mean?
You see that?
Like, I don't think, like, we've probably both knocked each other out. We've definitely put each other to sleep. Like, you know, he doesn't fight anymore. Like, he focused on
I wish
career.
We had you on before the Rough and Rowdy fight.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I could have gotten to his head. Like,
I
would have put my brother in a freaking, in a, whatever they stretcher.
Me and my brother would beat the, like, we would get so competitive that our coaches wouldn't let us spar anymore.
I feel like I've heard of your brother now.
Max Barrett. Yeah,
I've heard that name.
So Mad Max.
He's from Abington. But
we're from Abington, but he married a girl from Braintree.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Yeah,
because I know.
So,
like, repeat Mad Max.
Yeah,
that's
dude,
intense.
That's a duo.
Shut up, Max.
So like, we didn't move around a bunch, but we started at one gym, moved to Cape Cod Fighting Alliance, and they got us when we were already a little bit more developed, right before I went pro, right when he was still coming up in his amateur stuff. But like those coaches, they would like stop and watch us just watch it start, like boom, ba dum, ba dum, ba boom, 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 and we'd be just like slugging it out on each other, and it was like good entertainment for the people watching. But like, yeah, I have no, you're not gonna see me hold back on my little brother. Like, not only did me and him beat the shit out of each other,
like
my
dick
older brother beat the shit out of me, and then when my mom and dad got divorced, my dad remarried and had 7 more kids. So like, I'm a professional older brother bully. So like, my youngest brother's 13, right?
Like years
I've honed the bully gene, but it's just like a repeating cycle. Like, my older brother was a dick to me. I still love him to death. He's still my older
tough
brother.
Love, baby, yeah.
If I called him and I said, "Hey, I need you to come do this with me," you know what I mean? There would be no questions. He'd do it. But that's because he beat the shit out of me. I beat the shit out of him. We beat the shit out of each other. I beat the shit out of my younger brother. He beat the shit out of me. Those two beat the shit out of me.
The show goes on.
We would beat the shit out of all of our other younger brothers. You know what I mean?
And it was just like respect.
Yeah, the respect comes from that and the character. But
I'm learning my lesson here. Yeah, I might have to resell that as this is the real.
This is the real thing, dude. And we can live stream it out of my basement. We'll just get your brother there. Maybe we won't even tell him what he's showing up for.
They run a terrible show over there. They have no hospitality. They don't fucking give you anything to drink. They're sitting around for hours, and then they say, "Go in that ring."
Oh, I'm sure. Like, there's no commission,
drunk idiots, you know,
right? There's no like governing body. They're probably just like, "Hey, you and you, 10 minutes, let's go."
Yeah, it kind of was like that.
You know?
I heard you say on a previous podcast, you were shouting out a lot of the upcoming Boston talents. Do you want to shout anyone out? Anyone that's piquing your interest lately?
No, fuck everybody.
None of those motherfuckers, Jimmy.
I hate that question. Why are you listening?
I mean, I got there's a lot. There's a like
big J journalist.
Lot of guys coming up. I mean, the Northeast is the MMA game in the Northeast is finally evolving to the point where
New England Cartel.
You got the New England Cartel, but more importantly, the schools are realizing that if they want their top talent to make it to the next level, they can't waste all their concussions, for lack of a better way to explain it. But like, you can't waste all of your tough fights and all of your concussions on like decent guys that are going to give you tough fights if you can do the same thing by taking less damage, you see in the boxing game. Where like, people will accuse me of padding my record, but if you look at boxing, where those dudes make a ton of money, you know, they're like 15-0 before they take their first tough fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't get that type of treatment in MMA, but like 4-0, 5-0, you can get away with fighting bums, trash cans.
Yeah, you can let it
work
ride,
on the things
that
you want to work on.
I'm a baseball guy, so like that's equivalent to like, I don't know, a little league team sticking out there like 6'5" stud and just throwing 9 innings every game, blowing his arm out, just like the reps
right.
and everything like that.
Yeah, you like you want smart reps. You don't necessarily need hard reps. So to that original point, like people in New England are finally starting to realize, like, if you got two guys that can do well at the next level, do not make them fight each other when they're fucking getting started. Like me and this kid Manny Bermudez,
Manny Bermudez,
from Abington.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He grew up with my little brother Christian. He was a year older than him, but like, we lived in the same neighborhood. Like, I could throw a rock and hit his front door from my house for the longest time when me and my brother had an apartment in Abington. And everybody would always, you know, try to gas that fight up. Like, fight Manny, fight Manny, fight Manny. Like, no, me and Manny were both like 8-0, 7-0, 6-5, 6-7, 8-9 and 0.
He's a really
together.
Good fighter there. He got shit on the stick there, but
well, you start missing weight and you're going to pay the consequences for it. But that's a totally different discussion. The fact of the matter is, my manager knew better. You know, the guys from his school would entertain the idea of it, but my manager was very adamant about the fact that you guys can both go to the next level and do very well. There's no reason to sacrifice one of your careers to get the other one there. That's, you know, which is the same thing what happened with Rob and Calvin. You know, that just came out in an interview that Calvin did, or that Rob did. Like, at first they wanted to fight each other, and Tyson, also my manager, you know, said, no, you guys have so much, you guys would benefit so much more from training with each other than fighting each other. Like, let's get you both there, not one versus the other. Mm. So that mindset is coming around in New England.
And thinking smarter, not harder.
You know, and that's on the promoter too, to like have the eye to see talent. You know, you want to find guys that are selling tickets, that have fans, that always show up and fight. You know, put a little bit more money in there, put a little bit more energy in their stock than say like the guys that might show up, fight twice, and you'll never see them again. Like, don't feed those guys to those guys, but. Everybody can serve a role within the MMA community without necessarily like being upset about it. You know, like there is a whole bunch of pros that know that they're going to fight the toughest guys, and it's going to be like they're probably showing up to get paid their show money, but it's going to be a tough fight. It's going to be a barn burner, that's the role that they play in New England MMA. Like that kid that I fought, Jeff Anderson. Like I'm pretty sure. Like, if you look at his career, he's like a 50-50 guy. He's fought all the tough guys in New England, and he either knocks them out or gets knocked out. You know, and he was like, I think he was like my fifth or sixth fight, and I retired him in the first round with a head kick. You know what I mean? But he had taken, like, I'm pretty sure, he took Devin Powell 3 rounds. He took Calvin a couple rounds. He took a couple other guys, you know, into deeper waters, and I fucking, like, put him away in the first round. Yeah. Like, he's still one of the toughest dudes in New England, he's a 50-50 fighter. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Is there a guy,
he's a journeyman.
Yep. A guy or a fight that you've been through that was like the best fight you've been in, or like the biggest fight you've been in, like some shit, like it was like, wow, that was awesome. Like what it ended, some shit like that.
The contender fight was one of those fights, you know, because he like, when we weighed in, he filled out a lot from weigh-ins to when we fought. And when we were looking at his record and, like, digging into the promotion that he fought in Korea, like, he'd never really properly made 155. No. All of his fights were in kilograms, and they were usually about 160 or 165.
So he brought
closer to you. he never – yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but when he rehydrated and I got in there and fighting at him, like, this dude's fucking huge, bro. Where did you come from? You know what I mean? It was like,
that's the guy?
Yeah. You know, and I had some issues. Like, there was some adversity in the beginning of that fight, much like my last fight, and I was able to change up my game plan a little bit and utilize my wrestling to bring him down, wear him down, beat him. And another fight much like that, like the TJ Brown fight was a really good fight. We fought in 2017. He was the first fight after my dad passed away, and we beat the shit out of each other for 3 rounds. Like I knocked him out in the first round. I knocked him right back in, and then he ended up getting me a head and arm in the third round. That was another tough fight that I lost, but another great fight. A memorable fight. And then Vince McGinnis, he was another tough kid, kind of journeyman, like a Dwayne Ludwig product. And
you choke him out.
No, it was another decision. That was the only other decision victory that I had. He was just another tall guy. Couldn't really get past his jab. Had to use the wrestling to get through that. And so those were like three really, really strong fights that, both ways, but like were awesome, memorable fights.
Mm. I was looking at some of your fight history. Who did you – you had a triangle choke victory against someone?
I guillotined kid from Philly, Steve.
Oh, nice.
Beautiful. Fuck
Philly.
Like, if I could pull up the picture, there's a picture of me.
Celtics by a billion.
I have him in a guillotine choke, and he was a bit shorter than I was, so when I picked him up with the guillotine, like, his feet were kicking off my shins, and there's, like, a photo of me holding him up in the air with, like, by his neck and his feet on my feet, on my shins.
A good profile picture.
Oh, it was awesome. Killed it. I think I got like 200 likes on it. Cool. Facebook was huge like that. Yeah.
Humble brag.
It was a good one. It was a good one.
That's awesome.
I gave you some follows today if I can get some follows back on.
Oh, for sure. Dude, so this is the tough thing about Instagram. They cap your follows at 7,500, which why do I follow 7,500 pages? I don't know, but I do. There's a lot of filth in there from like group chats, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Dirty Mike and the Boys.
Oh, dude, there's plenty of filth. And you need to follow all those accounts, so those eat up a lot of them. But I gotta, yeah, I'll give you a follow. I'll find you on there.
Well, Pete, appreciate you coming on the show, man. This was great. And best of luck with the rest of your career. I mean, obviously, we're gonna be watching. I mean, UFC debut a couple weeks ago. You're gonna be right back.
Yeah, we're hoping for October. You know what I mean? And it's I'm going, like, talk about a man possessed, like. Fuck this bullshit. I don't even think I'm touching hands. I'm coming across the cage and the old boy's going to sleep. I didn't pull the trigger last time and I'm not gonna that's never gonna happen again. Not tonight, dude.
I don't want to hopefully no one listens to this so and they know that. Well, no,
it doesn't matter, bro. I went in there kind of reserved and like cautious and defensive, and that's what I'm saying. Like, my whole thing is offense and smashing, and
let's go.
That's what we need for the next
bring
one.
It, bring
we'll,
it.
We'll get your popcorn
hopefully
ready.
We can,
yeah,
hopefully
bro.
Hopefully we can go to the fucking fight.
We'll see. I'm sure that coming. If I don't think you'll see fans before the end of the year.
Yeah, I know. I don't.
So. I don't definitely not in Massachusetts, dude.
Maggie's
Baker's
gonna buy
a
Winnebago.
No,
we're gonna drive out.
Yeah, I'm trying to get an RV and drive across country to see all these people that we're bringing on.
Yeah, you should. That would be a bad idea.
We're gonna do it. Yeah.
Mic up an RV, get like a little mini bus.
That's the plan.
Shamrock.
So eventually, once
you can call it Short Bus and the Kids. That'd be the new podcast.
Yes.
Short
Bus
and
the
Kids. It'll be a mini series. It'll be good.
I'm making that.
Oh, the romper, the romper room on wheels.
We might have to get you in on that.
Yeah. I could do a month with you
podcast.
Guys. Yeah, for sure.
Us.
I'm excited, but yeah, hell yeah, looking forward to the next time you fight for sure.
Oh hell yeah.
Me too. We're binging on like. UFC right now, like it's definitely they've proven that they're the fucking best sport around right now. NHL's
really
solid,
amazing, yeah.
But yeah,
UFC's
I mean,
has been killing it continuously throughout this.
And the best part about it is like, I mean, I listen to WEI if I'm not listening to like my phone or whatever, but like. All these bubble players that are like pulling out halfway through, they're like, I don't think I really want to play anymore. It's like. You got the UFC guys are like begging to fight that can fight. You're not missing out on anything. You got a bunch of hungry people that just want to get out there and fucking compete and get paid at the same time. Like we want to get paid too.
Yeah,
we don't get to sit home and get paid. Like we only get paid if we fight.
Exactly.
And you only get paid if you win. You know what I mean? Like you get paid when you lose, but you don't get paid what you're banking on.
Yeah,
you only get paid half. Like you lose, you go home with half of your paycheck.
Yeah, I got buddies who've been laid off for 6 months and they're getting paid every week. That's fucking bullshit.
You know, so it's like, yeah, dude, you don't have anybody like pulling out because they're afraid to go train. Like, if anything, it's like you're getting guys told that they have to like chill out a little bit. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah. No, the dude's fighting four times and it's 7 months, 8 months.
Yeah, I mean that's the type of hype train that I'm trying to get on.
Their time.
You know what I mean?
It's their time to move up the ranks and.
Definitely.
The next big name.
Definitely.
So the same could happen for you, for sure.
Well, that's a wrap. So that was Slippery Pete Barrett. You know, UFC up-and-coming guy, Abington native. I thought that was a great interview. Really a lot of good sound bites in that, that little action there. What do you think, guys?
Good to know he's gonna come out guns blazing next fight because I'm for sure gonna bet on him.
Because he was a plus 375 dog, and like more than likely, if he gets another, like when he gets the next fight, like he's probably gonna be a dog again.
Oh,
and I'll be slamming dogs that day.
Dogs.
Hell yeah. No, he was great. He gave a lot of good info. UFC fans or not UFC fans, that was worth listening to. Mm-hmm. So
you hear that, Anton? You're addicted to value. You gotta bet on my man Slippery Pete next
value.
Fight. Yeah, that's value.
Value.
Let's go.
So I'm gonna transition now onto, you know, my bonehead of the week, and it's gonna lead into our Celtics talk. For obvious reasons, Philadelphia 76ers, like 4-5 center, whatever you want to call him, he's just awful. Al Horford signs a big deal, saying, "Oh, I don't want to play with the Celtics anymore. I want to play with Philly because they got a better chance to." win a championship, get swept by the Celtics in the first round. Like, do I need to keep going? Like, I think he averaged
Didn't
5 points a game.
You and Matt Forbes on this podcast last time were worried about the 76ers.
I was wrong. It's nuts
that you guys were.
Oh,
that
Mike Steele was finally right about something. So
no, that's a team of bums.
Oh, come on.
Are you fucking kidding me?
The Celtics have no big men.
Oh, my God. So the team with the worst coach in the league and an absolute bum is their best player. All right.
If you were going to go that...
Celtics in four.
If you were going
to
be
Celtics
told...
Celtics in four. Whatever you're about to say, Celtics in four versus 76ers.
They did do that.
And that literally happened.
If you were going to be told that...
Well,
Joel
Ben Simmons in there.
Are you just going to keep over-talking?
Yes, 100% I am. Yes.
Well,
no, you're wrong. Yes.
Right,
you're
definitely not
get
wrong.
Get fucked.
Bits of drink. Yeah. Move on to the next one.
So Joel Embiid averaging 30 points a game. If you were told at that in the beginning of the series, you think it would sweep? Absolutely not. You were a bonehead.
Maybe a gentleman sweep.
You might be the bonehead of the week. You sound like an absolute
troll
right now.
I think Al Horford's wife tweeted
everything
out,
you
maybe
just
Brad
said
could coach
continues
our team for
to be
plays.
Celtics and Forbes. Yeah, Brad. Like, none of that changed with what you said.
You
like
just keep,
Celtics and
all
four.
You keep saying is Celtics and four and have no logic behind it. I mean, I'm going to keep going on with Celtics talk, but you sound like the absolute bonehead.
How sweep it is.
Yeah, because, dude, you thought a lesser team would beat a better team. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't say they were going to win. All I said was it was going to be a good series.
Look at how defensive
he
is.
Oh, congratulations. You were finally right about something. I'm scared. I've been talking the whole time.
Oh,
you just keep saying the same thing
so
over and
over.
We might have to get a fight between you guys.
Yeah,
all that fight talk,
that wouldn't look
Bishop
pretty
Field. They'll see you there.
Well, after Steele and Naz rip each other apart, I wouldn't mind fucking up Joel Embiid. I had game four. We did sweep him. And I had the Celtics minus 4.5. Bullshit three at the end of the game. Joel took $200 right away from me. I'm fucking... So after you guys fight, I'm down to fight Joel Embiid because that dude's a pussy.
Well, that fight will end in like 3 seconds. So
I'll beat the bag out of Joel Embiid.
I think that's a great co-main event. I think that's perfect.
Steele versus Nas.
I don't even think Steele's worthy of a main event.
Brother.
I'll fight someone else.
I'll fight the operator as a co-main event.
I'll give.
And Anton's gonna fight Killian Frost.
Oh yeah, that'd be a good one. I'll give Joel Embiid a concussion so fast. And speaking
That's
of concussions...
Brett Brown's a bump. The entire 76ers franchise.
They could have flipped the script, even making it a competitive series. But no, Celtics in four. It was just an absolute domination the entire time.
But hats off to Tobias Harris. He took
that
really bad spill.
To them.
He took a really
and they were underdogs that series. Yeah. Like they flipped. I didn't think it was going to happen that easy again. You're finally right about something. Congratulations, you
bums.
Fucking
You're so mad
dumb
that
fuck.
Right. It sucks. Like, I'm sorry that you're this mad.
I'm not mad
it's
at
a
all.
Shame
you just keep
mad.
Saying that Celtics can force.
What
Celtics
did you want to say
four.
About Tobias
Harris?
I was just commending Tobias Harris for taking a spill that looked like it splattered his eyeball out of his socket and coming back into the game and trying to,
this
you
guy,
know, down 3-0, that must have been pretty tough. But you know, how about predictions for the most likely series for the Celtics' next opponent, Toronto? What
great,
do we?
Great transition there. That was textbook.
Yeah. Six.
I mean, season six.
Season six. Yeah.
Season six. That sounds like the logical.
Season
one.
Seven.
Yeah.
This is the defending champion Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, but
they don't have
That's nonsense.
But
like,
they are a very talented team. I think that Pascal Siakam got Kyle Lowry. Fred VanVleet. Is he still off the bench? Because he should be. Because he might be the second coming of the best six man of all time behind Manu Ginobili.
He's up there.
It's crazy. He's just buckets. He's like. Eddie House is a poor man's Fred VanVleet. That's pretty good.
Whoa!
Stroke of war.
Is that a hot take? Is that a hot take?
I don't know. I've never
love
even
it.
Seen
I don't
it.
Know.
I
love it.
I
once
it.
You get
to watch it, I'll have to watch
once you get Wichita series. State in my head, man, it's
yeah,
over.
Yeah, no, let it ride.
Best team to bet on in the tournament.
Final four Wichita State team?
No, probably like Elite Eight, but like the fact that they got there is impressive.
No, it's always great when Wichita State.
On the topic of Wichita State, fuck Ron Baker.
He's a good guy.
No.
Well, speaking of funny white guys, how about Clippers Montrezl Harrell calling our friend of the podcast Luka Doncic a pussy ass white boy mid game and creating quite a stir about the whole double standard of if that was the other way around it would be headline destroy Luka cancellation Luka
cancel
but
Luka,
I just want to say fuck that noise.
if you've ever played basketball as a white person, you understand that the game gets heated sometimes, and you know, let's not ignore 400 years of context here when it comes to if the roles were reversed, because, you know, that's obviously a much different story. I mean, obviously, it's not cool what Montrezl Harrell say, and the irony of his jersey having the phrase "end racism" in the back when he's called Luka a pussy-ass white boy, but it's not that deep. And as someone that has, you know, probably have, I probably have been called a pussy-ass white boy in the basketball court.
I think you were before the show. Someone called you it.
Yeah. Walking in here, someone did. It's just I would not take offense to that to any degree, and I don't think Luka did. I think Luka just, you know, laughed it off, and a lot of people were trying to come after Montrezl Harrell, and maybe a little rightfully so, but I don't know. I just think it was you know.
My point is breaking news here. I mean, this podcast won't be out till Tuesday, but we're at Sunday around like 8:30 right now when Luka Doncic just hit like a 35 footer to win the game. So who gets the last laugh now? I think the white boy does.
Exactly. Yeah, bang. Exactly. That's what that series is now 2-2. So
2-2. I think the Clippers are still gonna win it, but like, hell of an effort by the Dallas Mavericks there. I mean, they have no playoff experience. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis, great player, but I mean, he played for the Knicks. Come on now. He hasn't been there.
Yeah.
And they have Kawhi Leonard who we were all just talking about the Toronto Raptors, like, good team. But he took Toronto Raptors to the championship at one. Like, who does that? Vince Carter didn't do that.
Yeah.
Chris Bosh in his heyday didn't do that.
He absorbed a very good team, respect though. On the Clippers, yep. For sure. The Mavs. Anton said that the Mavs would win the fucking whole thing. They're putting up a good fight right now.
Yeah, his baseball World Series matchup's way more of a hot take. Reds versus the White Sox.
You want to hear another hot take I got right now? It's about a series that's not confirmed yet to happen, but let's be honest, it's probably going to happen. I have the Miami Heat beating the Milwaukee Bucks in this bubble.
Wow. That was a hot one.
Yeah.
Huh?
So if you want to hop on, I'm sure the odds would be great on that. I think they're just full of shooters, and maybe I'm a bit biased because the Miami Heat have some players that, you know, kind of look like me, and they shoot threes, and it's a lot of swag and lots of fun. But Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero are balling in the bubble, and the momentum they carry through that series with Jimmy Butler too, I think could really give.
Can I give my scenario of how it's gonna end?
Yeah.
So, like, going into Game 7, it's going to be like, okay, Milwaukee's going to take this. Giannis is going to, like, absolutely dominate. And then there's going to be, like, 10 seconds left in the game, down 2. Jimmy Butler, for some reason, just gets fucking pissed. Winds up on Giannis, completely whiffs, and the ball goes, like, just squirms everywhere. At the same time, Miami offensive possession here. Kelly the clinical Linick is just going to take a 3, nail it, Celtics versus Kelly, bang.
I like that.
And watch that happen now. You look like a freaking
That would be pretty god. That
would be insane. I'm going to stick away from the Kelly Olynyk talk because, like, fuck that. But him winning Game 7 against the Wizards when the Celtics, all time, like, I'm glad I
top five electric game ever.
Plus, like, big shout-out to Dave Westerman for obvious reasons. We've already talked about that on the show.
Always shout-out Dave Westerman.
The clinic, baby. Shut up.
We'll get in our baseball talk now. Steele, what you got for a salute, you piece of shit?
My salute, Fernando Tatis. Is it even, like, if you don't like that guy, you're an asshole. That is literally the most electric player. Yeah, like, Slam Diego, that is the most electric guy, maybe even in sports at this point.
What was it, a 3-0 Grand Slam?
Yeah.
Like 9?
It was 3-0, they were up, like, 9. He goes deep. Even, like, Manny Machado, who, like, might be the biggest asshole in that sport, like, looked at that and was like, fuck, he did that. Like, there's, like, a video of him being like, shit, dude, you took him deep 3-0. Like, and it's beautiful.
Stupid-ass unwritten rule. And Fernando Tatis Jr., best player currently in baseball.
Let's go, yeah.
I mean, fuck Mike Trout.
Him, Juan Soto, and Acuna. If you don't like those guys, you're an asshole. Those three people you should love. You're a bad person. Yeah. Like, you're literally a bad person.
Is he the last night of today? He swung 3-0, and then big shout out to vertically challenged people. Jose Altuve made a hell of a play up the middle. But it was the fact that, like, he swung 3-0 again.
I think
they're up 9-0. I was like, let's go. Yeah, Altuve's batting 147
because he played that
beautiful.
He doesn't have
They're in second place. I looked at their record. They've probably won like 6 out of the last 7, so they're going to make the playoffs. I think the playoffs in the MLB this year is going to be fucking wild.
Wild West. Yeah, yeah. Wild West.
It's
going to
be
yeah.
teams that like don't belong there, and somehow it's just going to like work out.
I'm hopping on their bandwagon now. I mean, I'm a San Diego guy through and through.
Are you off the Red Sox bandwagon now?
I would, yeah.
Dude, the second I saw that and like Donatello said Slam Diego, I was like, that is the most electric thing. Like he nailed it. Slam Diego is unbelievable.
And that's
like,
why some of the things
shirts.
I have here to fix the Red Sox, the first one here involves something with San Diego, and that's we have to trade whatever we can to get Don Orsillo back in the commentary table. That dude brings the fucking energy.
He's the best, one of the best in the game. My counterpoint to that is, I mean, I know we're doing this whole thing of how we fix the Red Sox, but why would Don Orsillo want to leave Slam Diego?
Right.
The Slam Diego Quadres.
Yeah. Like, I don't
that's
like
incredible.
That move for him.
He's definitely having a good time in San Diego.
Oh, you know how much pussy he's probably getting out there?
He's probably wearing a bathing suit in the booth every day. He's probably fresh off the beach. He's
yeah,
probably
he's
drunk.
Absolutely
he's
led to ride.
Smoking joints up
Magic
in the booth.
Magic
Mike
knows San Diego firsthand, right?
I know that place, like, the back of my hand.
I would love to have Don Orsillo. We got to go there and try to get Don on the podcast.
I bet
man.
Don's down in Tijuana right now. If I know Don the way I think I know Don.
Him and the Rem Dog is letting it rip.
He doesn't have to be in the ballpark when he announces the games anymore. They get their own studio. So I think he moved it to like some strip club in Tijuana.
Why not us?
Who's the Red Sox manager right now?
Who knows? Who cares? Don't
fucking
honestly,
fire
not,
him, Jason. Barry
I know you guy. Want to have a segment talking about how to fix the Red Sox. But let's not even bother.
All right,
we'll save that for another.
I think
day.
You clean. They already started cleaning house. Traded Brandon Workman, Heath Hembree. I think their best option in the offseason, obviously, get rid of that. I don't even care about how to pronounce his last name, Roenick or whatever. Get rid of him. The guy's. I mean, not that just the pitching staff sucks, but like he sucks too. I think, I mean, obviously, Alex Cora, I don't think they're going to get him back. I just think he'll go somewhere else. But the counter is there is, I kind of, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So, like, A.J. Hinch is, like, the big one that, like, the Red Sox should look at in the offseason.
This is a fake season. The season's a wash. So we might as well do some crazy breaking the barriers. We get the first ever chick in the Major League Baseball. The Red Sox become the first team to get a chick, and then we double down and maybe even get like a transgender baseball player.
What in the hell?
What do you
I mean,
mean
that's
what
a wild
that?
Move, all right.
I think for publicity and like it's like the it's
no,
like Jackie
right.
Robinson. I am right.
So you want to make us look like bigger
yeah,
clowns.
Let
okay.
it go.
Well,
let
the
it.
Season's a wash anyway. Let's make some fucking history.
I told myself I wasn't going to ever announce his name on the show. But give Luke McDonough a fucking chance.
Give Luke a chance. You have the hashtag. Dog.
Sell
enough good
yeah.
softball players
the
in
media.
This room and yeah. DeRoe, the city of Quincy
fitting.
That could
give
be
him
on the
Give him one inning.
I mean, seeing him get lit up would, I mean, I'll leave it there, but.
We're moving on to the Bruins?
Yeah, we'll move on to the Bruins. That was fun while it lasted. I think the Red Sox are like 6-20 now. They said they're on the track for 18.5 wins. Like, that sounds so fucking depressing. Like. Yeah. Might go jump off a bridge.
Ouch.
I mean, there's a what we got over there? The Fort River Bridge.
The cup, so
that's
fine.
A good candidate there. Yeah.
We don't want
the cup now.
You want to
start the cup talk? So tonight, which, I mean, I guess this will come out Tuesday.
Yeah,
but
let's start up against the fucking Lightning. Yeah. Let's ride.
So game one's happening tonight. This comes out Tuesday, which will be game two. So I'm thinking 5-3 Bruins. Halak has a bad game. Charlie Coyle has 2 goals, and then Pasta gets obviously 1. Like,
Naz is just trying to be God tonight.
I don't know.
Calling the exact ways things are going to happen.
Shoot your shot. Let's go.
I don't know how Halak's going to do. I hope the best. Like, I hope we do. I personally think Vasilevsky's a fraud. That goalie. I don't believe in him.
I'm on the other end of that.
I think that guy's an unbelievable team in front of him, and that's why he, like, wins all the games. Like, I don't think that guy's as good. He's a very good goalie. Like, I'm not saying he sucks, but I think the team in front of him makes him better. And, like, I think we can defeat him.
I think
we can beat that guy.
I think
guy.
Bottom line of the Bruins is last year they had the easiest route to the Cup. On paper, they really didn't play anyone good in the Eastern Conference. I'd say Columbus was pretty good. I think Columbus was good. Carolina,
Vezina winning goalie.
Yeah, it was a cakewalk. But Tampa will be the best team they play all playoffs. Yeah. And when you don't have your starting goaltender and you have Jaroslav Halak playing, which I think he's a really good goalie, but there's a reason why he's, like, the best backup.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's not over.
Yeah.
We stand a prayer.
I honestly don't want to make, like, I don't want to pick. I don't want to do like Tampa and seven, or like Bruins and seven, whatever. But I just think there's a lot of question marks around this series. And like it happened a couple of years ago, the Bruins got off. If my prediction's right, they won game one, and then I think Tampa won four in a row. So like you said, I think you're watching SummerSlam tonight because you said game ones don't matter.
Game
so,
ones are for cowards.
So you just make
game one says. Is for cowards. I so want that on record. I want you to don't think he's shitting on me. I want it on record. Me, game one's for cowards.
Print the t-shirts.
We might have to put it on the back, the neutral one.
Yeah, that's yeah. fine. That's fine.
Well, with Rass being a coward,
I'll see you in game fucking seven that matters.
We're in the bubble. Grow up. We're in the bubble. Rask has ditched us. Fuck Rask. Why? Now is the time to go through with my plan, genius plan, 7,000-pound goalie.
It is a good
fastest
time to
man
pull
in the
that,
world.
Yeah.
Why not us? Why not us?
Maybe I even start stocking up. Maybe I start putting down some cheeseburgers.
Move quick.
Game one's
tonight.
We need to get Gutterball some steaks. We need to get this man huge.
Let's get him
He's
the
our
Irish
future goalie.
For a steak
He's
dinner,
our future
huh?
goalie.
I will say this though: Tom Brady moving to Tampa. Mookie Betts now hitting dingers in L.A. The best Bruins player, David Pastrnak.
No, Patrice Bergeron.
He's still the best player.
Bergeron,
the
GOAT.
He wasn't on the Duncan's commercial.
He's got the keys to the castle in Boston. If you want to say, so obviously Tom Brady's had the reign for years.
Who do you think is the current biggest Boston star? Who do you think?
Patrice Bergeron.
Really?
It's close, but yes, Patrice Bergeron.
All four sports?
I think
all
right,
four sports,
right
100%.
Right under it is up-and-coming Jason Tatum. I'm going to be wrong. And then anyone on the Red Sox, like, probably not right now.
No, fuck
it. Patriots, I mean, they're probably biggest contestant
James
right now.
White? I mean...
Cam Newton's irrelevant in Boston
Edelman,
sports ways,
Stephon
but, like, your
Gilmore.
Name.
But if you say, like, a cornerback or even, like, receivers, like, your best
Belichick.
Athlete
yeah,
in, like,
right,
Boston,
right.
that's like
Newton's
saying your best athlete in Tampa. I mean, I
just
guess
name,
Tampa's but, the
like,
wrong way
not.
To put it, but, like, some, like, East Bum, like, town. But my bottom line here is Patrice Bergeron's got the keys to Boston.
I like it.
Let's hope he plays his ass off tonight.
Exactly.
Well, he will, but...
Yeah. Anyone have anything else?
Shout out to Dwayne The Rock Johnson for buying the XFL. Dwayne, Mr. Johnson, if you need any great creative ideas to influence your game of football, you can find me at Askins for Trouble or Jimmy from the Q on Twitter. I have great ideas to expand the great game of football.
And happy birthday, RIP, to my boy, Kobe Bryant. His birthday, he would have turned 42.
Yep, I'm rocking number 24 in the Road Dogs Football League tonight in our game.
That's
just
huge.
For Kobe.
That's
yeah.
huge.
So we're going to win no matter what.
I saw the Dodgers.
Yeah, we're at 8 the next game. Let's go.
So the shirts are coming soon. I think we put in the order. New logo. I think I gave her a shout out last time, but Emily Powers, Dynamite logo. What's the little Timmy there, Anton?
Yeah, little Timmy and you know.
The little Timmy that could.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's I cannot wait for those. I'm buying 1,000 shirts, so you know I probably won't need 1,000 shirts. So I'll eventually start giving them out, but
might hand one to somebody.
Yeah, the design is beautiful and it really captures all of our great beautiful faces. So
also invested Acorn. That's all from Steel and Naz Mass Music Radio's podcast.
You started investing?
No, I just want to throw it out there because you do it a lot.
Yeah.
How's it going, Magic? Let's go. Bitcoin Minute. Go.
You go.
Bitcoin Minute. This week in Bitcoin, we're down a little bit. I thought I almost got hacked. I thought all my Bitcoins got stolen last week.
Blew a stickball, Tanny, the fucking asshole.
Yeah.
You guys didn't even get a hit.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
Did not get one hit.
I was more
Put
worried
one
than my
play,
entire
though.
Net worth was fucking in some random guy's freaking bank account.
Oh, you know what we got to shout out? Shout out to Irish Pub Softball Team. Oh, number one seed. Shawnee O walk off. And James Gutterball Askins might be the biggest hype man in all of softball.
Oh, yeah. I was. Thing is, you know, Mass Music Radio is great enough to help us produce this podcast. I might have to start, you know, looking into being a DJ because on that baseball diamond, I was bringing the thunder. It was the Quincy Thunder.
You blasted any porn?
Like, yeah.
Tell him who taught you.
Sean O'Callaghan hit a walk off of Curran Jorgensen. I want that known.
Yeah.
And Magic with probably the biggest hit of his career. Gets the rally started with one out. absolute teammate here. Davis was the out before. Matt Davis, probably fastest kid in Quincy. What does Magic do? Hops off the base. Pinch runner. Matt Davis scores like in two batters later. End up winning the game. So, big shout out to Magic Mike's
selflessness. I wasn't that selfless. I actually yelled, "You pieces of shit, I'm staying on the bases." I did come off those bases. And shout out Matt Davis. He did what I wouldn't have been able to do. And with big win. Fucking big win. Playoffs next week.
Get your popcorn ready, folks. And that's it.
We'll be back.
Bang.